Maybe. Yes, sir!
Michiana's sports leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT, presents...
Johnny, that's better than most.
How about him?
That is better than most. Better than most!
The Golf Show.
I'm a big believer in fate. I have a good feeling about this. That's all I'm going to tell you.
I'm John Hoffman in for Darren Pritchett on the Golf Show today on Michiana Sports Leader. WSBT is always with us, Tim Firestone and John Foster. Gentlemen, welcome. That was a fun weekend last weekend watching the Masters. That was one of the best Masters, and I say that every year, but it really was this year. That was a lot of fun to watch.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. It was really great.
Those guys know how to put on a show.
Yeah,
they really do.
It was great to see the camaraderie between those two. You felt like they were really rooting for each other, yet they were really
They got a lot of criticism from Stephen A. Smith, who's a golf expert.
Oh yeah,
that's your expert, right?
Yeah, the next day he's just hammering them, saying they're not athletes. They were kind of rooting for each other there. Well, what's wrong with that?
Nothing wrong with that at all. Nothing wrong with that. It was great fun to watch. Now, Sergio obviously got a big monkey off his back. He's 37 or whatever he is. Mm-hmm. Been around for almost 20 years and had not been able to win a major until now. So what does this mean for Sergio?
Well, I think for Sergio, I don't know that it meant – I mean, I'm sure it meant a lot to him, but at the end of the day, I think some of his comments that, you know, his bank account was doing just fine. He felt like he lived a pretty good life even without having the major. And while it was certainly obviously thrilling and great for him, I don't know that it was life-changing necessarily in the world, but –
Yeah, most people talk about, well, they're going to open the floodgates, now he's going to win a bunch of majors. I don't think he cares. Unlike a lot of guys that, okay, now I can really get cranking. I think he's been deprived for so long, and the best player without a major, like you said, he's glad to get the monkey off his back, and it'll be business as usual, which is, I think, is kind of healthy, because he does, you know, he's getting
that
married.
Might make it easier for him to win.
Yeah, exactly. You've heard the guys talk before about, you know, I wasn't even thinking of winning. I was just, you know, concentrating on what I do it the best, and all of a sudden it happened. So, yeah, I mean, I'm happy for him. I think we talked to the show last week about, I think he had the reputation, and rightly so, as a whiner when he first came up, a bit of a sore loser. But he's gotten it together, and I cited Scott Gump, who is our assistant men's coach at Notre Dame, who played on tour and played with Sergio and played at the Masters, how popular he is among the other players. And you never really get that sense.
Yeah.
You know, they never convey that.
And the media, even, like a lot of the media that I've heard.
I mean, he doesn't hold back. That's one reason he got labeled, I think, as a whiner, is that he wasn't afraid to say what he felt, and as a result, he got lambasted for it. So, I think 90% of the people there were pulling for him.
Yeah, it was funny. I was at a restaurant and watching it, and you didn't even get the
restaurant
sense that
it, or bar. Too,
well, there was a restaurant. Yeah, they served food. But
all right, I guess you could.
I happened to be, believe it or not, sitting at the bar at a restaurant.
Wow, that's
amazing.
But it didn't feel like anybody. There was probably 10, 15 people sitting around, and you didn't really feel like anybody was, you know, cheering or even paying attention to the tournament other than me. And then when he made that putt on 18, the place exploded. It's like, where do these golf fans come from?
Well, they're golf fans.
Well, geez.
Yeah, they're not doing cheers and stuff.
That's a good point there. I didn't hear the golf clap over there. But, you know, it's crazy, but Sergio's biggest Achilles heel his whole career has been his putter, and it almost haunted him again.
Well, if they were taking bets on that putt before he hit it, I'm like, there's no way he's going to make this.
Yeah.
He just cannot. I mean, you look back at Carnoustie.
You're talking about the one on 18
the first time around. You know, the thing that's kind of been overlooked, and I noticed it, the last six iron shots he hit were perfect. And
they
go back, you know, 13 was, you know, he was so fortunate to make par there. And I also say people tend to forget the ball hanging up in the rough on Saturday on 10 or on 13, where it could roll back in the water. It was kind of a Freddie Couples moment that having him on 12 the year he won. But 14, he hit it to 6 feet. 15, they almost jarred it in two.
Yeah, almost.
16, he was, what, 4 to 5 feet?
Yeah.
17, 12 feet, but that was the closest anybody had been all day. And then the shot at 18, and then in the playoff. The last six iron shots he hit were absolutely perfect.
They were.
So
it was ball strike. He's never been the question.
That's true.
That's right.
You know, the putt he missed on 16.
Oh, yeah.
I just said that he's going to miss this to the right. There's no way he's going to make it. And he fanned it and missed it to the right. And then even the stroke he made on 17, did you see that?
Yeah,
like he took the putter way back on the inside and kind of this. It was a 12-footer and he left it 4 feet short.
Yeah.
So
it wasn't pretty. But I, again, I'm happy the guy won. And I, you remember they were talking about Crenshaw and him play together at Austin Golf Club the week before. I couldn't figure out why he would have been with Ben in Austin. Well, his girlfriend played at UT.
Ah.
Okay. And her parents lived there, so he was visiting his parents.
Her dad played quarterback.
Yeah, he was a quarterback. And her, I think her grandfather was an athletic director there, at Texas. So Ben went out and played with him and made the comment he's never seen anybody strike the ball better than Sergio. And Ben seems to have a penchant for picking winners like that. So I think the Crenshaw magic rubbed
off.
Now,
I got to talk for a minute about Justin Rose and the fabulous round he played other than that tee shot on 18 in the playoff. That was really the one bad shot I saw him hit. And
he
what can you say?
Than Sergio, I think. I mean, I know the score was the same, but early, I mean, when they made the turn, I thought there's no way Justin Rose is going to lose this thing.
Mm-hmm.
He was doing everything right. And I don't know if he got rattled or it's just golf, but it had to really bug him a little bit. Like on 13, he probably thought he had it at that point. And to see that turnaround and Sergio to make par, I think was all the difference in the world. So
yeah, he's a great player, great ball striker.
And he's not
good
unpopular.
Putter.
I think they were saying people were rooting against him. I'm not so sure they were necessarily. He's not an unlikable figure. He's really a good dude, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway.
Let's talk also about Jordan Spieth for a moment because he went second, win second the last couple of times. And once again this year, number 12 got him. What can you say about
that? I say it's different than last year because he wasn't going to win this year. I think it was a little bit I don't really care type of thing. I mean, I know he tries all the time, but it was a little bit different because it really didn't mean anything this year. He wasn't going to win anything based upon the way he was playing. But also it didn't seem to bother him a whole lot either.
No, I mean, that's golf, though, too. I mean, some days these guys, you get it going, and you get into a groove, and you get into a rhythm, and some days it's just not there. And most days for John and I, where it's just not there.
Right.
But for these guys, sometimes you just don't have the mojo.
Yeah, and even, you know, even Tiger in his prime didn't win them all.
No.
Right.
Or even finish second in them all.
Mm-hmm.
So
it's a hard game.
It is a tough game. Rory McIlroy sort of came from way back to finish for another very respectable finish, but he was pretty well out of it when that happened.
It was interesting. He got very little coverage.
I know.
Yeah.
It was weird.
You know,
even when he was
playing well, you
didn't really see him because I thought going into that day with the group of, well, with Jordan Spieth and Ricky Fowler, I thought we wouldn't see anybody but them.
Right.
But they shot themselves out of it pretty quickly. But, yeah, I can't tell you how Rory played or what the issue was. I didn't really see him in the early rounds just based on
– I think Rory is becoming the new Phil Mickelson. I mean, he is so explosive and can make birdie after birdie after birdie, but then he's, you know, double here, you know, bogey here, and he's, you know, kind of the exact opposite of a Jordan Spieth who's more Mr. Consistent. But he's got I would still say to this point in time, he's got the most firepower on tour just going low and being able to really shoot a number. But he can't keep any kind of consistency.
Consistency is the hard part, Phil.
Yeah, exactly.
I also see a little bit of a flashback when I look at him. His body shape has changed as a la Tiger Woods. He concentrates on a lot of lifting and stuff.
He's ripped. I mean,
he is, and I'm not so sure what that does for your golf game. I think for his social life, maybe it helps a little bit. Although his bank account can make up for about anything.
Yeah, that's right.
He could look like Colin Montgomery and not have any issues.
All right, we've got much more to come on the golf show as we try to keep things vaguely on the rails here. John Foster and Tim Firestone with us. The golf show on Michiana Sports Leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT. And welcome back to the golf show on 96.1 FM, WSBT, Michiana Sports Leader. As always, Tim Firestone and John Foster with us here. I want to talk about the par threes at Augusta a little bit. And John, you obviously have some experience with that. You know, the traditional final round pin placement was used at 16 on Sunday, letting players to kind of go off that bank and just roll the ball down near the hole. And Matt Kuchar really made it pay off. Is that when you played Augusta? Mm-hmm. Where was the pin on 16?
Actually, one of the days we played, it was they used that same hole location, and on 12 they used the Sunday location on the same day.
Mm-hmm.
And It didn't matter where the hole location was for me. I tell this story about on 12. They say, you know, Augusta Country Club is adjacent to the property there, but you can't see it. I saw it. Because if you hit it 20 yards over the hole and you're up on the side of the hill and the azaleas, you can see the 10th green at Augusta Country Club. So I want to correct everybody when they say that. They really are interesting holes. In 12, the sun or the wind was down all days we played, but it didn't really matter. If you look at the landing area based upon how that is angled, it's so narrow, you know, and the last day I played, I hit it left and it's just off the fringe, but you couldn't putt it. And I had to hit a chip and, you know, that's not exactly my strength. And I think I took three whacks at it and hit because I was so afraid of going into Race Creek.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of it was just in my head because they make such a big deal about 12 when you watch it. That I was just psyched out completely. It wasn't a hard shot at all.
So, I think people at home see, you know, 120 yard shot. And
how can
you
not?
What's that? How can you not hit that green? Like, is that what? It's like 17 at Sawgrass. It's a 130 yard hole.
But it's angled, right?
It's angled. So the landing area actually is much smaller than Sawgrass.
The length of the shot makes a huge difference, what direction you hit it, right?
Absolutely. And also, the wind does swirl down.
Oh, boy.
It's so interesting about Augusta where there's not another golf course in the country other than one's home course where, John, you could say number 16 at Augusta, and everybody knows what it is. Mm-hmm. That's what I think the popularity of that event is, that it returns to the same place every year. Now, Sawgrass does. I understand mm-hmm. that. Everybody knows that golf course.
Yeah.
Isn't it? And they get 18-hole coverage, as used to be. They would come on at 4 o'clock and get the last 2 hours, you know,
right,
back when you and I were somewhat
young. When I was somewhat young, mm-hmm. I could just see a camera shot and I know what hole it is on the
amazing.
Back nine for sure.
Yeah, absolutely right, yeah. So it was really cool. I mean, I just can't say enough about the place. It wasn't hard. I mean, the putting was hard, but it's such an enjoyable golf course to play if you play the proper tees. You
know, is there a flat lie anywhere on that
Not
course?
Not really. In some of the greens, at least your lie is flat. There's still undulations, but tee boxes are normally flat, and that's about it.
That's it, huh?
As television technology has gotten better, I think people can see more and more of the undulations and the elevation changes. Didn't you go down and watch it mm-hmm. one time?
It's still, you still can't.
Holy cow.
Number 10's the one that struck me the most. I mean, you know it's downhill, goes on the...
Yeah.
But when you're out there and you're walking the golf course and you're out there, it's like, you have got to be kidding me.
Amazing.
It's like, it's incredible the different elevation changes. And the undulations even on the green, so...
Yeah.
It's a scary, scary golf course looking at it on TV. Yeah,
I mean, if they grew the rough up there... That could really be an interesting event.
Obviously, and they've never done that, and they won't, I'm sure.
I don't think. That's just not what they're about.
Right.
That's not what the golf course is about.
Yeah.
But anyway.
All right. So 16 and 12 are obviously the marquee mm-hmm. par threes, but there are a couple of
the
others,
other two
too.
Are really hard, by the way.
Are they? Quick word about them. Go ahead.
You know, 4 and 6.
Yeah.
They've lengthened those to where 4 now is 220 or so.
Yeah,
when I played it. I don't know, it was 8 or 9 years ago, and we were playing the championship tees at 170 yards. And there's nowhere on that green where you can get a good look at the hole, no matter what the hole location is. It's really hard. And then you go to 6, which is okay. It's a little bit, I would draw a corollary to number 3 at Timmy's course with the 2 tiers. If you get on the wrong tier, when it's below, you see they make birdies and stuff, but
mm-hmm.
it's usually back right
mm-hmm.
on Sunday. And
to get on that right level is really hard.
If you go long, I mean, there's just no way you can keep it on the top tier. Mm-hmm. So anyway, those are really hard holes. I think they'd be a lot more popular and a lot more recognizable if they were in the back nine, obviously.
Yeah.
But they're a lot harder than either 12 or 16.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but the point of Augusta is that there are birdies to be had on the back
that's
nine.
Right.
It's designed that way.
Yeah.
That's part of the attraction.
That's why we always get a good show.
That's why we get a good show on Sundays.
No
it's because
doubt.
Somebody's going to go low on the back nine.
I didn't, but yeah.
No.
Nor the front nine, man.
Notice, I've
you went low on
my
the 19th hole.
I went low on the par three, though. I had a lot of greens there.
Well, Kuchar, of course, Kuchar put the ace in. Beautiful shot. You know, it sort of reminds you of the Nicklaus shot that, you know, be right, it is. and it was. But, you know, with that with that hole, if the hole's not on the Sunday placement, it's a very different hole to play, isn't it?
Exciting, yeah, because they can never get the ball close, and
that front right position is almost impossible, and even that back right's tough too.
Yeah, there's a reason they go back to that every Sunday.
And there's usually a hole in one almost every year. It seems like last year. Remember the one that Ricochet? Who I forget who that was.
There was one year where they had three aces in one day there. But I'll tell you, Matt Kuchar is a sponsor's dream. I don't know. Did you see the interview after the round?
No.
When he said, by the way, could you see the Bridgestone logo? And did it slowly roll?
I did see that.
Bridgestone had to just be high-fiving
each
other.
Yeah.
And then when he went over and gave it to the kid.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that is Matt Kuchar.
Yeah.
You know, he just knows about the right thing to do at the right time. So he's hard not to like.
Yeah. He's another one that needs to win a major. You know what I mean? He's a good enough player to do it. And
that's still the kind of golf course where you'd think he might do it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we've got it. Yeah, we got a long list of people that we think should win majors. But there's only four a year to be had.
Yeah.
And fewer than that when Tiger's in his prime. you see a lot of players out there. I mean, I remember back in the 90s, we were all talking about how many majors was Davis Love going to win.
That's exactly right, yeah.
And it, you know.
Well, you wonder if Dustin Johnson was healthy, would Sergio have won his first major? I mean, you just got to get so many breaks, you know.
Yeah.
So
always got to be some luck involved. All right, it's the Golf Show on Michiana Sports Leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT. I'm John Hoffman filling in for Darren Pritchett, John Foster, Tim Firestone with us. We'll be back in a moment. Welcome back to the Golf Show on 96.1 FM, WSBT, Michiana Sports Leader. John Hoffman in for Darren Pritchett with John Foster and Tim Firestone, our regulars on the show here. I want to talk a little bit about putting on fast greens. Now, we don't have anything the equivalent of Augusta around here, but some greens are faster than others. And I guess I want to ask each of you for your thoughts on how you go about dealing with it when it's a little faster than you're used to.
Well, I think the first thought I wanted to bring up to everybody listening is, you know, to the average golfer, everybody kind of freaks out about a fast green. And the reason they freak out is because they're not used to playing on fast greens. The PGA Tour players play on fast greens every week. Is Augusta a little quicker? Probably, but they're used to that. And I think, you know, amateur golfers here aren't used to that. So when they do get a chance to play at a golf course with fast greens, then it really kind of freaks them out. So I wanted to make that comment before starting about the actual technique. But I think at the end of the day, and the technique it's going to sound stupid, but just hit it softer. I mean, it really is about feel.
Tim.
Tim's right.
I can't tell you to change your grip. You don't want to change your grip. You don't want to, you know, hit it off the heel or use a different. I mean, there's all those. You just need to get used to the speed and hit it softer.
If you watch any week on the tour, but especially at Augusta or whatever, watch the length of the backstroke on the putter for most professionals.
Mm-hmm.
What the amateur does, if the greens are a little bit faster, they take a foot and a half backstroke and then they slow down.
Ease into
and they accelerate into the ball.
Decelerate.
Yeah. And
that's bad news,
it's
right?
really hard for them to take a 4-inch back, you know, take it back 4 inches and then accelerate through the ball. And even on slow greens, you have to accelerate or the ball's not going to go where you want.
Mm-hmm.
So just watch that next time you're watching and then go out and try to make a 4-inch, you know, take a 4-foot putt or something. Even on 3-4 footers, people normally have the same length of backswing, and it's just the degree to which they ease into it, which is not going to be very successful. So I bet Tim would agree. I would much rather play on fast greens than the slow ones. Because if you think about it, the margin for error on a 4-inch to 5-inch backswing versus a 12 to 14-inch backswing, what are the odds you're going to hit the ball squarely with the right acceleration with it? It's a heck of a lot easier, and then just you got to pick the right line and not be afraid of having a 3-footer or so coming back. So.
Yeah, that's a good point. I think a lot of amateur golfers are just worried about making sure they get it close. They don't have to have them hit another 3-footer where, you know, these guys, you know, and good players, you know, they make 98% of 4- and 5-footers, then they're gonna hit the putt like they want to make it, and it may go 3 feet by, you know?
The weird thing about Augusta, and granted, the greens weren't as quick when I was there, but I didn't have a tap in all week. And you watched on Sunday. How many 3-inch tap-ins did you see? You don't see
them. You don't see them.
You have 3 to 4 footers,
yeah,
regardless. And that's what killed me down there. I mean, the number of 3-putts I had, I can't imagine. And they weren't because, you know, I had 45 footers my first putt. You just can't leave the ball around the hole. Yeah. And that makes it very difficult.
All right. Now, typically the pros are playing on greens that are running, what, about a 12 on the stimp, yeah, something probably, like that, yeah. 10 to 12?
Yep.
What are the greens normally run high season at Warren and at Blackthorn?
We have two different green complexes and green, you know, the mm-hmm. green complexes. If I go to 11, we're looking at 5-hour rounds. Because of the undulation in our green.
And again, the local amateur golfer is not used to playing on.
Sure.
And the size of the greens, too, because you don't hit as many greens at Warren as you do Blackthorn, so the chips are more difficult on a fast green. So we're good at 10.5. Even for collegiate events, we'll go near 11. The USGA, and we've talked at length about this, even for the Senior Open, we're not going to go over 11 because it becomes goofy golf at that time. Tim's got a totally different animal out there.
But we still try to keep it the same thing. I mean, we find a direct correlation of pace of play based upon speed of greens. Like, for example, we've hosted college tournaments where we tried to really get them going, and we had them 12.5. And we had a young lady, I remember, in a tournament that made like a 13 on number 18 because it just kept putting it all over the green. I mean, Blackthorn's got some holes there too where, you know, you just can't keep it on the right shelf. You're in trouble. But typically, you know, we'll keep it, you know, 9.5 or 10 for everyday play. And then the LPGA Symmetric Tour event, we get it cranked up a little bit closer to 12. But
you know, it's really interesting. About 4 years ago, we did a real informal survey. It was a real, but we gave it to every player. It came off the course, and, you know, it's 3 questions. It was very simple. But basically, you know, if there was anything you could improve about the golf course, what would you do?
Mm-hmm.
50% said the greens need to be faster. The other 50% said the greens need to be slower. And Tim and I deal with that all the time. Yeah. If that's what they're complaining about, I'm good. If that's the only thing they have to complain about. But invariably, you get people that like fast greens, you people that don't like them, and there nobody said the green speed was perfect. You just never hear that.
The other problem too, and John and I have, is that Augusta National plays probably 8,000 rounds a year, maybe less.
Yeah, good point.
You can't keep greens at 12 and 13 when you're doing 30,000 rounds of golf. Yeah. It just something's not gonna work out there. You won't have any grass left. So that's the other reason.
It's very stressful.
Yes.
You know, the way around it to a degree is a roller. We purchase rollers, and that helps because it doesn't stress the grass out, and you'll pick up a foot or so for every time you roll it. But to Tim's point, the footprinting and the traffic on the greens, the grass is already stressed when it's mown to, you know, 1/16th of an inch, as most bent grass is. We just can't do that.
Yeah.
Well, I remember I was in Memphis for a number of years, the PGA Tour event down there.
Yep.
They had bent greens for a long time, and the heat would just kill them. The course was the greens were so soft because they had to keep them watered to keep them alive. And finally, they decided to go with Bermuda greens. Mm-hmm. And when they made that change, the course automatically got about 5 shots tougher for the pros.
It's interesting. My brother is a member at TPC Southwinds, where they play the FedEx in Memphis.
Love that course, by the way.
It's a great golf course. It used to be a bad thing. It's like, God, we had to go to Bermuda. But the new varieties of Bermuda.
Yeah, not as grainy.
Oh, my goodness. And you can get them much faster, and you get bent greens. So that's come a long way. But back when you were talking about, John, I'm guessing – it was like they were resigned to the fact that they had to do Bermuda because of the grain and everything Tim referred to. But anymore, it's not a bad thing necessarily.
Well, certainly. I mean, it's improved that course a lot.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
In terms of the play. The other thing I wanted to mention to you guys is a comment I heard from Lauren Roberts a number of years ago, who was, of course, one of the great putters on tour in his prime.
The boss of the Moss.
The boss of the Moss. And they asked him to coach amateurs on putting, and he just had one sentence: grind on the speed. That was his comment. Just grind on the speed, because if you get the speed right, if the line's off, you're still only going to be a foot or two from the hole.
Yeah, I mean, I listened to what Lauren Roberts said. Incredible source. I think that is the case. I mean, I think most 3-putts are due to a speed issue rather than a directional issue. And and that's why we have, you know, we keep our practice putting green at the same speed as the ones on the golf course.
I would hope so.
Well,
kind of
a lot of places
that.
Don't.
You'd be surprised.
And
yeah.
then
really?
You walk out on the first green, it's like, holy
Whoa, what happened
cow.
There?
So take the time to, you know, take a few putts before the round. You're not taking putts to check your stroke. It's the same thing that if you go to the driving range prior to your round, you probably shouldn't be there working on something. You should be there to warm up and to get your confidence up a little bit. But, yeah, I think it's imperative for golf courses. I think there's an obligation to have your practice green the same speed as the greens on the golf course. But believe me, it isn't always the case.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Hmm. Yeah, that's yeah. pretty scary. and when you – so the time to practice and work on stuff is after the round?
Either after or between rounds.
Between
you know,
rounds,
I
yeah.
mean, the day off or whatever else. But if you're – and they even said it down there, as a matter of fact. They were talking about one player in particular – that showed up on Monday and was working on something. And they're like, there's no way he's going to make the cut. And sure enough, he didn't. So, yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
Okay. So that happens.
Yep.
All right. So basically it comes, you're telling us just slow down your stroke.
There you go.
Hit it a shorter stroke.
Yeah. And, yep.
And again, if you're going to go to a golf course where you're playing fast greens, to John's point, you got to get there and you got to practice. You got to get used to it. That's really all it is. I know that sounds really simple and we're being kind of funny with
well,
you, but it's true. It's just it's what you're used to.
You know, I've gone around with our golf coaches at times about they'll go to another golf course where the greens are faster than ours, and which is typical this time of year. If you're going south, I mean, we can't keep ours mowed down this time of year. We'll lose them, and they'll come back and say, you know, our kids just weren't used to that speed in the greens. Well, you should be able to adjust. I mean, after you knock the first three putts 10 feet by, you think it would register. And it just boggles my mind that – and you know, we're not screaming at each other, but there's always a struggle on we would like you to get this golf course representative what it's going to be like at the course in Florida where they're playing.
Yeah.
Well, okay, it ain't going to happen. The green – I mean, grass types are different and the climate's different. So, you know, you got to be able to adjust too. They're not all going to be the same.
Mm-hmm. All right, so well, your course is hit. Obviously, you're opening in April or earlier.
Yeah, I'm trying to. Yeah,
and you know the course is not grown in the way it's going to be later on when the weather gets a little warmer.
True.
So
actually, Warren and Blackthorn are in perfect condition.
Yeah.
Always.
We have the dome we use this winter.
That's right.
Yeah.
So, but what a amateur players need to remember about playing early in the season versus playing midsummer.
Thanks for asking that question.
Yeah, thank you.
We didn't even pay him to ask that. He just came up with that one on his own. I love it.
Well, I'm a bad golfer. I need all the help I can get.
Well, I think the first thing is to be patient. I mean, when we're opening up the golf course this year, we opened in February. John didn't get open quite that early, but when we're opening a golf course in February and we have you know, three guys on the maintenance crew.
Yeah.
It's kind of hard to get the golf course in tournament conditions. And so I would say, you know, be patient. We're not going to cut the greens every day. The grass isn't even growing, really.
Right.
We're not going to change the cups every day. We don't, you know, we're not going to have all the bunkers raked. Things are going to, it's a process. And just be happy that you're out there in February.
Yeah, you know, no doubt. I mean, we didn't open in February. I didn't want the flak, basically. But, and we make adjustments to the price depending upon the condition. So, you know, the proverbial spring rates. One thing I've gone to, though, both in the spring and fall, I haven't picked drop-dead dates for those. I base it upon the course condition. And like last fall, we went into November without kicking in fall rates because the golf course was in perfect shape due to the warm fall we had and stuff.
Yeah.
And this spring, you know, we're not ready for it yet, but it won't be long before we kick into full rates, too. So, you know, we're not asking you to come out and drop down full rates and, like Timmy said, change the cups every third day or so. We're just opening to give you the opportunity to get out and play.
Mm-hmm.
So,
all right. So
be patient.
Yeah.
You know, there's a thing called winter rules a lot of groups play by where you can.
They play those in June, July, August.
That's a good point. What am I talking about?
Exactly.
We learn as we go. Yeah. That's right. It's the Golf Show. Tim Firestone, John Foster with us. I'm John Hoffman for Darren Pritchett on Michiana Sports Leader 96.1 FM WSBT. Welcome back to the Golf Show on Michiana Sports Leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT. John Hoffman for Darren Pritchett with John Foster and Tim Firestone. John, of course, with Warren and Tim with Blackthorn Golf Club here in the South Bend area. Guys, let's take a look at the rest of the season. We're already, with this wraparound season, it's making me crazy. We're getting close to halfway through the season already. And I just wanted each of you to give me some thoughts on you know, who the players are you're watching going the rest of the way.
I think if Dustin Johnson can stay on his feet and not fall down the stairs,
yeah, would help.
I don't think that anybody is going to be able to challenge him for player of the year, and he should be in contention in every major that's left. He just drives the ball so far and so straight, and now he found a putter that he can make putts with. That he's kind of Tiger-esque here. Yeah. You know, the last 6 to 12 months here, he's a freak of nature.
Yes, he is. And if he loses, it's usually because he beat himself. Mm-hmm. It's not doing something stupid.
Yeah, so he's playing great. And I think all the other guys are, you know, the Jordan Spieth's playing well. And I think some of the notables maybe to talk about that aren't playing as well. I thought Bubba Watson seems to really be struggling right now, not playing really good golf. Jason Day's got some issues with both off the course and on the course. Yep. And then McIlroy's just kind of up and down here and there. Matsuyama started out really hot and hasn't played quite as well. But there's a lot of firepower on the PGA Tour right now. I mean, a lot of guys really, really can go low and play some. And some of these young guys, I mean, we've had, what, 359s in the last 12 months or whatever?
Justin Thomas is just, talk about a freak of nature. I mean, he's a tiny little guy, and he hits it a mile.
Yeah. Did you see the the last couple of years they've taken a spring break trip with Jordan Spieth and Justin Thomas and
who else?
There's two or three or four of them that go on a little spring trip.
Ricky, I think.
Ricky Fowler, So after the Masters, they go to some Caribbean island. Uh-huh. So they tweet out pictures of their, you know, jumping off the roof into the pool at the place they're staying. Yeah. Well, yesterday Gary Player sends out a tweet of him in a Speedo. Thanks for the invite to spring break.
That's hilarious.
It was awesome.
That's
really
cool.
He's probably in better shape than those guys are, but it was pretty funny the jab there. But
all right, so those are the top guys. The thing about the PGA Tour is, though, that there are guys that I've never heard of that just turn up.
I know.
On almost a weekly basis, there's somebody in contention, and I'm going, who's this guy?
I think a part of that is that there's a lot of people playing in Europe, developing their game, coming over, and you think they're rookies, yet, you know, like Peter Uihlein's kid, what's his name? Mm-hmm. I can't even think of the head of Titleist, who's played in 4 years over there, and now he's starting to play over here. There's also, like John Rahm, if you follow college golf, nobody's surprised by that, because he was such a dominant player in college. So I think for the casual viewer, it's like these guys are popping up out of nowhere. But I think for people that follow golf intently, there's not as many surprises necessarily. But to your point, John, there are just a boatload of people that can play. And it's much deeper than it used to be. I don't care what anybody says.
Yeah, no doubt.
Yeah. The tour is a lot deeper.
No,
I mean,
doubt.
How is there sort of a line where you sort of saw it getting tougher? Is it just sort of been a gradual process over the last 20, 30 years?
I think it's gradual based upon things such as, you know, Tim's 6 years old. Okay, I'm going to concentrate on golf. And we see him in junior events and everything else. So they spend their whole preteen years playing in AJGA events across the country. Then they go on to college, which is a great free way to hone your game. And by the time they get to the professional ranks, nothing seems to rattle them. They've played golf every day for the last 10 years. I mean, that wasn't the case back whenever.
Right.
You know, like Jack Nicklaus played four sports. And Tim and I both played other sports. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, we're better at the other sports than we're with golf. But I think maybe that's it, John, is more specialization.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And the fact that there's better nutrition, better equipment. How big a difference has the equipment made?
I think it matters a lot. I think more so than the equipment, it's the what's the word I'm looking for with the TrackMan and the other
the technology
to analyze
what's
happening in
and
the
putting
golf
the right equipment in your hands,
and then from that you can put the right equipment in. I don't care how great a driver you have, you got the wrong shaft and it's not going to work for you.
Yeah.
So I've been amazed at what you can do with a TrackMan to change people's game. Basically, it'll tell you what's wrong with them. They spin the ball too much. They're hitting it too low. It's just amazing. And I know enough when I use it to be dangerous. I really would like to know more about it. But, yeah.
The thing that strikes me, you know, I've been seeing some of this stuff about Jack Nicklaus that's running on Golf Channel mm-hmm. right now. And you go back to when he was a young guy, and he was hitting those 340-yard drives. And I think, what was he hit? What ball was he hitting? What club was he using to do that? It was
It's amazing.
It's incredible.
Well, a couple things. Yes, it was incredible. He was that much longer than everybody else he was playing with. But the reason I think he was hitting those yardages was the irrigation.
Yeah, there wasn't.
There was no irrigation.
Oh, so hard as a rock ground. Yeah, like lots of
countertop was part of it. He was still 40 yards longer than anybody else he played with. So.
Yeah.
And if Jack would have been in this era when he was in his prime with this technology, he probably would have been the longest player on tour, too.
Yeah, that's true. That's a really good point. But I did see he would hit his, again, it's probably a lot of its roll, but he hit a 1-iron 285.
Yeah.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
It really is. I could do that on a runway at an airport and it wouldn't go 285.
The competition overall was not nearly as tough in his day.
I agree.
And that makes you wonder if Jack in his prime today could be possibly as dominant.
He couldn't win 18 majors.
No.
There's no way. I think he would probably admit that. I don't know.
Yeah.
He's pretty egotistical. I don't know that he would admit
that at all. But there was five or six guys that could beat him, you know, on a mm-hmm. weekly basis. Mm-hmm. We're on the PGA Tour today. I mean, anybody can get hot and go super low and sneak out of victory.
Yeah, there's 50, 60 guys out there any given week can turn up and win.
I agree with that. Yeah.
So it's a different world. All right, guys, let's wrap up the show with some thoughts about what's coming up at your various installations. John, you want to go first?
Yeah, I mean, we're obviously open for play. I will say that starting the mid-May through the 1st of June, we're a ghost town. The students have left. It's a really great time to come out. And secondarily to that, we have plenty of 2019 U.S. Senior Open apparel that's starting to roll in. Come on out and take a look. Maybe buy something. So there you go.
You'd appreciate that.
Uh-huh.
Right,
be great.
Go on, Tim. You got to follow that.
Yeah.
Wow. Let's hear it.
The course is open. It's in great shape. We've got our Blackthorn cards on sale where you can play for discounted rates all the way up until May 1st. So take advantage of that. And we've made some small changes to the golf course with some tree removal. So come on out, check it out. A couple of the holes look really different. I think everybody will enjoy it. And actually, the golf course is in...
Remove the tree on 5, by the way?
No. Oh,
okay, I was hoping for that.
Yeah, I think there'd be some backlash on that one.
Might be, yes.
Yeah. the course is in great shape. Grass is growing and... We're already in prep mode. We are doing some bunker renovations on our 14th and 15th hole, so we have a little bit of ground repair. This is great project time for mm-hmm. golf courses. I think John's got some projects going mm-hmm. as well. So if you hit it in the bunker on 14 or 15, you get a free drop.
There
so
you go.
It can save you a shot.
Outstanding. Tim Firestone, Blackthorn, John Foster with Warren. Thanks, guys, as always.
Thank you, John.
Thanks, John.
This is the Golf Show on 96.1 FM WSBT, Michiana Sports Leader.